at Yalta, Roosevelt looked very, very ill, shrunken, weak. The spirit was still there, the intelligence still there, but Churchill was quite concerned about Roosevelt's health and about his future. He was also concerned at the disposition of forces in Europe and the very strong Russian position. And that concern was exacerbated when Roosevelt at the conference indicated to Stalin and to the delegates that American troops would be withdrawn from Europe within 2 years after the end of hostilities. This, Churchill thought, was probably a mistake to have announced so publicly. Franklin Roosevelt, of course, would die in April of 1945, and by the time the Allies convened at Potsdam over the grave of the Third Reich in July of 1945, relations between the Allied powers were severely strained. Roosevelt was gone, and elections in Britain would lead to the ouster of the conservative government. The ouster, remarkably, I think one almost always feels, of Winston Churchill as prime minister in Britain and Clement Attlee in the Labour government's installation. This was the government that would lead Britain into the post-war world. So that when the big three met in Potsdam, it would be Truman, Harry Truman, Clement Attlee, and Stalin. Truman was already deeply concerned about Russian actions in Eastern Europe, particularly in Poland, where the Western-oriented London Poles, the government in exile that had been in London during the war, had largely been pushed aside by the Soviet-supported, Soviet-sponsored Lublin Poles. And in May of 1945, the United States had halted aid to the Soviet Union, in part to express its displeasure with Soviet high-handedness in the East. Truman once again emphasized the American demand for free elections, free and unfettered elections in Eastern Europe, and Stalin seemed less and less inclined to respond favorably to this statement. Also, Truman was less inclined to humor the Soviets because he learned while at Potsdam of the successful test of the atomic bomb. Henceforth, the United States was much less interested in Soviet entry into the war against Japan. Indeed, by the time of Potsdam, it was quite clear that there were grave reservations within the American foreign policy establishment about Soviet involvement in the Far East. And this may have played a role in the American decision to use the bomb in early August. Between 1945, then, and 1948, the Cold War would descend upon Europe. Between 1945 and early 1948, the Soviets would establish pro-Soviet communist regimes all over Eastern Europe, in Bulgaria and Romania in 1945, in Poland in 1947, in which elections appeared to Western observers to be manipulated, rigged. In Hungary during the summer of 1947, and in February 1948, the Soviet Union supported a communist coup in Czechoslovakia. The presence of the Red Army was of paramount importance in this assertion of communist power in Eastern Europe, but the Red Army was also able to work with local communists, indigenous communist forces, who had been extremely active in the resistance against the Nazis all over Eastern Europe. The communist resistance in Europe was by far the best organized, the most consistent after June 22nd, 1941. And so the Red Army, Soviets arriving from Russia, were able to work with local communists who had some legitimate claim to a major role in post-war disposition of economic and political life. But already, in early 1946, the split between the Allies had become was widening and widening into a massive fissure. It would be on March 5th, 1946, in a speech at Westminster College in Fulton, Missouri, that Winston Churchill, now out of office and touring the United States, would give a speech that would place its stamp over the entire era of the Cold War. And I would like to read extensively from that speech here because it captures so vividly, I think, already by the spring of 1946, the atmosphere, the nature of the Cold War.